Hi, y'all. We are back today with another podcast episode, and we are going to be diving even further into PDA. If you are not familiar with what PDA is, go back and listen to some of the previous episodes. I'm really excited to have Steph Curtis with us here today because she is going to talk about her parenting experience of having PDA teens now and really what family life is like. I think this is going to give so many amazing insights. So Steph is from the UK, so you'll hear her awesome accent. And we're going to even talk a little bit about in terms of timelines today. This is really starting to, I'd say, gain much more traction in the US, but the UK has been well ahead of the US with their understanding and acceptance of PDA, although it definitely sounds like Steph was a pioneer for her family and all of this.
Welcome to a parenting space actually designed for you, where you can get answers about navigating a life that includes autism. I'm Dr. Tay, a licensed child psychologist and parental coach specializing in neurodivergent affirming care. I have supported hundreds of autistic children and their families and have been in the autism field for over a decade. And I know firsthand the impact autism can have. I was 12 years old when my little brother was diagnosed and my family had to learn how to navigate the autism journey. It wasn't always easy. 2 decades later, I now create resources and services I wish my family had, including this podcast, and I developed the whole family approach. On this podcast, of course, we will talk about autism, but we will also talk about your personal growth and well-being as a parent, supporting your non-autistic children, and sharing personal stories of other families so you know you're not alone. Quick disclaimer before we jump into today's episode. Anything shared on this podcast should not be considered clinical advice, and you should consult with your team of medical, mental health, and developmental providers if you need support.
So, Steph, I'm so excited to have you here today. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's lovely to be here.
Yes. So let's have you give us a little primer on your family and a little introduction of, how you also got to this point of educating and talking about your PDA experience.
Yeah, sure. So I always introduce myself as Steph with 2 girls, and they are now 18 and 16. But it was when our youngest daughter was two and a half that we first came across the term autism, really. We knew her speech wasn't quite developing as quickly as her older sister had. In terms of sound, she was communicating, but the sound wasn't coming out. We went to a speech therapist who then referred us to a pediatrician, and they very quickly actually mentioned the word autism. So that was a surprise to us. We weren't really having any difficulties with family life. It was really, we thought just about the speech. But when they said autism, I looked back on certain situations and thought, actually, now it does make sense. So we were noticing some differences between our older daughter and our younger daughter in terms of how they reacted to things. And then I would go along to these groups of mums who had other autistic girls. And I'd sit there and I'd think, my younger daughter sounds a bit like their girls, but there's just something that's different. Mm. And I couldn't really put my finger on it. But that's why then I would go home and I started searching online. And that's where I came across the term pathological demand avoidance. And just all of those characteristics, it was like tick, tick, tick for our younger daughter.
So at that point then, okay, you said your younger daughter's 16. And what age would you say you started coming across PDA stuff?
So it was about probably 6 to 12 months after her diagnosis of autism. So that was back in 2011, I would say. Started 2011. So yeah, that's quite a while ago.
Yeah. And where did you go to start learning about PDA? Who was talking about it back then in the UK?
Yeah, so originally, and how I got to it was, I was searching for something that was a bit different. And I came across the term PDD-NOS, pervasive development disorder, not otherwise specified. And I thought that sounds a bit more like our daughter. And so from there, then I carried on with the searching. And it was actually something called the PDA contact forum. So back many years ago, it was more about forums than it was about social media. And that was the front runner of what is now known as the PDA Society, which is the national charity in the UK for pathological demand avoidance. So yeah, there were parents on there discussing with each other about what their children did and how they reacted to certain situations. And it was those extreme reactions that didn't really seem to make much sense that really, I think, brought us all together.
Wow. It makes sense. We know that PDA and the conceptualization of it has been around for a while, but very cool that you were able to like stumble on this and then give words to what was going on when it otherwise seemed, okay, something is different here and I have to figure out what that is. Yeah. Very neat. And the PDA Society is such a great resource now. So to know how long it's been around and helping parents like your family, I think is really neat to think about. So then your older daughter, just to clarify, is she autistic PDA or is it just your younger daughter?
So our older daughter was actually only diagnosed autistic about 2 years ago, autistic and ADHD, but definitely not PDA. I say that as a very different profile to our younger daughter. I don't see many similarities in the way they react. So I think it's always helped me along the way to have that reference that she is different, all different, aren't they? But yeah, that has really helped us. So that kind of has made the PDA profile more noticeable for our younger daughter, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you search on this forum then about PDA and you're learning about it. What were some of those like early things that you started maybe to think about differently or shift and do things differently? Because I know there's so many parents right now that are early on this journey. And I don't know if this was your experience, but I hear this a lot of it can be really overwhelming to make all these shifts. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about what that was like for your family.
Sure. I always say that our daughter, so it's Sasha, she led the way really because we couldn't ever really make her do things that she wasn't able to do. And I'm very much keen on this phrase, can't, not, won't. So it's not her picking and choosing what she wants to do. It's not her being awkward. It very much runs through everything, everyday life. And she just doesn't have the ability, the skills, whatever it is, the anxiety, the nervous system. There's so much involved in it. But we were led by her in terms of what she was able to do. We were lucky as well that we had an older daughter we could do, but also that Sasha didn't really mask how she was. So when she went to school, which we didn't think she would do because she'd been diagnosed quite young, we thought we already knew how much she avoided and resisted a lot of activities. So we were surprised that she could manage to a point with support in what we call mainstream school over here. So Sasha didn't really mask. So at school, she showed the same kind of avoidance to them and their demands as she did at home. So that kind of helped us really because it obviously helped them see how she was as well. So we were maybe believed a bit more than some other parents are. So that was helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what then, so she's leading the way here. What were some of the ways in which then you started responding once you started learning about PDA?
Yeah. So I would say, and in terms of changing the mindset, that is really what we have had to do. I think most parents expect to be able to parent in a traditional manner, maybe the same way as your parents have done it, or completely different if you didn't feel that was good, but you probably have preconceived ideas about how you're going to parent. And society has a lot of expectations, and most of us are quite keen to not stick out too much, and you think you're going to follow all of those patterns. But we just found we couldn't do that with Sasha. Mm-hmm. We had to become detectives and figure out why, what was causing her problem, why wasn't she able to do certain things. And sometimes we would go through and we'd find out that sensory issues were a problem. I know, for example, socks were a nightmare for us. We'd have to put them on and off again and on again. The seams were never right. And then we found seamless socks, and that was a life changer. But that was solving one issue, but that then still didn't stop her not being able to leave the house to go and do something that we knew she really enjoyed, like swimming, for example. She would have the most fun at swimming, but we would just have days where she could not leave the house. And yeah, when she was younger, we thought it was would not, and we thought she just didn't want to, but we learned along the way what it was and what the problems were. And some of it was difficult to really figure out, but we've over the years have learned how to reduce a lot of the demand and not worry too much about society's expectations and all of that.
Yeah. I think this idea of being a detective is, I love that mindset too of trying to figure it out because it can feel very unpredictable. Why one day can she go to swimming and another day she can't go to swimming? And what is ultimately going on there? So that detective mindset, I love that perspective. Talk a little bit, now that she's in her teenage years, then, about some of, like, in this parenting journey, did you question, like, oh no, are we doing the right thing by reducing these demands? Or were you feeling the pressure from society that, like, you needed to be more boundary driven, rule oriented, teaching her things? Is that something you ever experienced?
So I think we were lucky because we came across it when she was so young. We didn't need to remove too many demands when she was younger. She didn't seem to have same levels of anxiety about things, for example. So I think as we've gone on, we have reduced more demand. We are at a stage where she's at home a lot of the time, doesn't leave the house an awful lot. There's a lot of anxiety about the outside world in general, but I keep reminding myself that she is a teenager and some of that has to do with hormones. A lot of teenagers don't know who they are and how they, you know, engage and react. So yeah, time-wise, it's difficult to compare now to them. When she was younger, she would go out, and because I've been writing a blog for many years, actually since the day she was diagnosed, we had some kind of chances to go and get involved in fun activities. And we would try that, but we always knew that we had to have an exit plan. I always had to give a lot of information about where we were going, make sure the situation was right, which I knew I didn't need to do for our older daughter. So there was a lot of extra effort involved when she was younger and going anywhere outside of the house.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what was this experience, to your knowledge, like for your older daughter, of all these accommodations having to occur for Sasha, knowing there's an exit plan that you guys could have to leave at any moment?
Yeah, we knew that and I felt that. And that's why I called the blog Steph's Two Girls from the start. Obviously, I didn't know, but I had a bit of an inkling that the diagnosis of autism for our youngest would have an impact on our eldest as well. And I very much wanted people to remember that, that her life was going to be different and possibly more difficult in some ways. And yes, over the years, I felt guilt about maybe having to cut short trips where our eldest was involved as well. But we've tried to make that better by individual quality time, doing different things for our older daughter. I think in terms of how she reacted to her sister, yes, there were things that were frustrating for her, but very much instinctively, she knew also she saw the kind of approaches we used and she learned how to use those as well, because the alternative was the extreme reactions from our younger daughter. So we all balanced out.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a sense of, like, how each of your daughters, like, describes their experiences of being autistic and what that's like?
Yeah. So for our oldest, because it's quite a recent diagnosis, she is happy for me to tell people and she hasn't talked about it a lot yet. I'd love it if she does at some point in the future. And for Sasha, I think because she was diagnosed so young, you know, she was never in on any of those assessments. She was in on the assessments, but, you know, wasn't aware that was happening at the time. We talked about it with her as soon as she started asking questions. So she's very aware. I don't know if she understands so much autism. I mean, who does? It's also very different. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting one as a parent to try and talk about when from someone else's experiences. I do know our youngest and both girls have actually shared their thoughts with me for the books that we've just had published. So there are passages and questions and answers from them both in there. So that's helpful. But yeah, I would love it if they went on and shared their experiences at some point. I think if our youngest was to do that, it would be in the form of an animation. So she loves video editing and she's already produced one about her school experiences. That's quite an interesting watch. So yeah, we'll see what happens in the future.
Oh, is that available to the public? Or
Yes, it's on YouTube, yeah.
Okay, so what we'll have to do is I'll want the link of that, because I feel like that would be really cool for parents to be able to hear from an autistic PDA or what their school experiences are like and thinking about how it applies to their child. I think that could be really awesome. Yeah. In terms of the PDA piece then, Sasha, describe it all. What's happening internally for her? Is that something you guys talk about?
No. So Sasha's communication, as I said from the start, her speech was delayed, but there was a good degree of catch-up, which was one of the early indicators of PDA, but not so much now. But yeah, so her communication skills, I'm going to say it's not her favorite thing to do is to converse verbally in any way. So we don't tend to have big discussions. There'll be texts occasionally, but not big going into that. So in terms of describing her feelings, that is something that she would find very difficult. But she does say the odd thing. I think very much she knows all about my blog, has read lots of the posts, you know, relate to that idea of PGA and not being able to do things.
Yeah. And I don't think that's a very uncommon experience at all of in terms of like preference for how to communicate or what autistic individuals are able to access in terms of their communication as well. And then that in-tunement with what the emotional experiences can be an area that does need more support. And I think even as adults, we struggle with this sometimes of describing what our emotional experience is like. So what would you say led you to writing the book then?
So the book came really because of the blog. So the blog I started on the day that we were given that autism diagnosis. And I think I did that really because I got home and I thought, first of all, I was going to be asked all the same kind of questions in every appointment, such as what was the pregnancy like? What was the birth like? Yeah. Can she hear? So it's quite a common thing for autistic children to be sent for hearing tests because they're not responding to their name and kind of all these sort of questions. So I wanted to have somewhere that I'd put all the answers to those, but also to let friends and family know who weren't spending a lot of time with Sasha, what she was doing that was different because she was just 2.5. She seemed like most toddlers when that phrase toddler tantrums, which I don't like, but that might have been how it would come across to other people. But I already knew it wasn't that. I could see all of the other behaviors, but when people were not spending a lot of time with her, it could seem as an isolated instance. And you know, that judgment, parenting, being judged, that feeling that other people tell you what you should do better and that you should be stricter and have those boundaries and all of those things. So I started the blog starting to try and explain a bit of what was going on at home. And so from there then, so that was 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And after about 7 years, a publisher came to me and said, would you write a book? Actually, a book of kind of advice for other parents. And at the time, I said no, because I believe that I know what to do with my family and my children and our situation, but I would struggle to put that in words and tell other people what to do. I can say what's worked for us, but I didn't want it to be a pure advice book. So I left it at that stage. But then a couple of years later, I went back and I said, I'd still quite like to write about our experiences. I think they might help others in some way. So we compromised. I did our story, really, but with some small bits of advice at the end of each chapter.
Oh, I love that. And what would be something that comes to mind for you right now of advice that you would share or something in the book that you were like, yeah, I feel great about this piece. And this is something that I'd want every parent that is parenting a PDA child to know.
Real quick, just a brief interruption, because I want you to know you don't have to navigate this journey alone. If you're in a place where you have concerns about your child's development, you've been on the search for a therapist that provides evidence-informed neurodivergent affirming care, or you're needing more support as a parent, the whole family approach may be a good fit for you. Autism doesn't just impact your child's life, so you deserve care that works for your child and your whole family. Head to the link in the show notes to schedule a complimentary call where we can chat about your unique circumstances. We can help you decide if Dr. Tay, concierge clinical care, would be a good fit for your family. And if not, we will provide you resources for your next best steps.
So I've written a post on my blog that's called Strategies for PDA. Strategies is sometimes seen as not a great word. I think approaches is probably a better word now. I'm not trying to trick anyone with a strategy, but certain things that we've done throughout. And I think the key one is being flexible and just not having a fixed idea of what we want. I think it's not being selfish in any way, really, and letting our daughter lead the way. As I said, because we found we had to, because otherwise things just got much worse. So yeah, a lot of planning, a lot of offering choices. Language is so important, the kind of phrases that we use with Sasha. I always joke and say she doesn't like the word no, that it's her favorite word, but only if she uses it.
Right.
If we use it, it causes stream meltdowns, anxiety, and people would go, how can you not say no then? But we say no in different kind of ways. So we'll say, maybe we can't go to the park today, but tomorrow weather might be better or whatever it is. So yeah, we've definitely done a lot of changing our language, and we don't say that she needs to do anything or she has to do anything. And I really believe that, really. I, it took me a while. I was very traditionally raised and traditional. I enjoyed school. I love going to school. And I would have said that is something a child needs to do. But obviously now, and Sasha kind of opened my eyes, the fact it's just not suitable for every child and it's not something she has to do. And we've had to do a lot of looking around to try and find alternatives. So yeah, that's a big issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love this idea of flexibility, and it's something I talk with parents a lot about. But from your experience, how do you balance flexibility with parenting and your approaches versus your own mental health? Like, how does that come into play?
Well, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm lucky in terms of the genes I had in my parents. And I think I'm quite positive. I'm more glass half full kind of person. So I think that's helped me along the way because I have had to give up on some things that I would have liked to do. The relationships outside of our immediate family, some of those I would have had more time for, but it was too difficult to take our daughter lots of places, really. So I did for a while become quite isolated when she was quite young. And then I had just had to find different ways and doing the blogging online, reaching out to the people who understood our situation was probably the one main thing that's helped me. Finding other families who understand and knowing you're not alone makes such a big difference.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. So in terms of schooling then, talk a little bit about Sasha's like schooling journey because she was in mainstream schooling and then now is not. So can you paint that picture for us?
Yeah, so she started here in the UK. We start around the age of four and a half at a mainstream school. And she went in already having the diagnosis, so we knew she would need some extra support. So that was kind of small group support initially, just teaching and class assistants, being aware of her needs. We were really lucky with a school that she started at. Her older sister was already there, of course, which also helped because think the staff could see that her older sister was very good actually at getting on with work and doing what she was told. But so Sasha managed there up until about the age of 9 or 9, 10. She just turned 10 actually, but it became more difficult in those what we call junior school years. So from the age of 7, 8 onwards, Sasha didn't really realize she was much different to the other children up until about the age of 8 or 9. And that was then probably, that was part of what caused, you know, the end of that school really, was knowing she was different, not feeling she fitted in. But the other part of it was the academic work. And Sasha is very bright, but unable to sit down and do an exam that somebody else wants her to do because there's no logic to that for her. She's not interested in topics that she's not interested in. So yeah, we struggled in terms of the teaching. She can teach herself anything and has from YouTube, from being online. She could tell you every state in the US, for example, and I couldn't do that. She's learned a lot herself, but it has to be what she's interested in. She's very much led by her own interests, and other people have mostly not managed to lead her down another path. So yeah, at that age, it was a mix of those two things, really. And then we had some time out. There's not really other schools that are suitable and set up for children who are academically able, but who are not fitting in with that group of mainstream children. So it's really difficult. I don't know what it's like where you are, but it's been a struggle. And we've tried a couple of different, three, four different things, I think, since then. And what she currently does is goes out a couple of times a week in a very short school day, and mostly is developing her art skills because that is where her interests lie. Yeah, with some attempts to do the English and maths alongside.
Yeah. So what would you describe, and maybe the terminology is just different. So I'm finding a lot of these PDA children end up needing to be homeschooled, or sometimes they'll call it like unschooling here. Would you describe that type of setup for her, or is she still
Yeah. Sasha was always very much, she wanted to be in school. So I would have done the home educating here. My mum was a teacher actually, and I would have loved the idea of preparing lessons and all of that, but it didn't work because Sasha wanted to be around other children, and you know, she wanted to have a peer group, and that really has been the difficult part, as you'll see from her school video, is not finding that group of people with her interests that she can share with. And so yeah, now she does go out of the house to a different provision where she has some opportunity but not much to mix with others, and yeah, it's definitely been challenging, I would say.
Yeah. Is she at a specialized art school now, or?
It's a specialist school that was, it was actually set up for children who'd been bullied, who had high anxiety and who dropped out of mainstream. So it's not necessarily an exact fit for her profile, but they are working really well with her. So.
Good. Good. That's awesome. Yeah. And then in terms of like her nervous system dysregulation currently, what does that look like at 16 now with a lot of proactive supports, with a different school environment, reduced demands, all of that? What does that kind of look like on a day-to-day basis now?
Yeah, so we have really reduced a lot of demands at home. As for example, she doesn't have to get dressed every day. She's more comfortable in pajamas. She's actually, her body temperature just runs so high. She has a fan, an electric fan pointed at her, switched on all day and all night, actually. That's things we have reduced in terms of expectations like that. But obviously, when she goes out and leaves the house to go to school, she's happy to get dressed. That all works fine. But anxiety is a bit. We've noticed more anxiety, but maybe anxiety about typical things. So, for example, when she was really young, we've been abroad on holiday many times on planes. We were actually lucky enough to come to Florida, but it was on that plane when she was about, I think, 7 years old that we first saw her read the safety card in the plane. And you could see the fear from that point. And so we have been back on a plane once since then, but now she can't fly. She's just too anxious about that. And she's anxious about natural disasters. So weather, if it rains, she's convinced it's going to flood, even though we don't really have that kind of extreme weather here. So she takes a lot of things too extreme or feels that deeply. But that, I would say, is a different kind of anxiety to what the PGA is causing her. But it is all mixed up a bit, though. There's obviously the anxiety about being looked at that teenagers get often as well. So there's a lot of different things to unpick there.
Yeah. Does she have any other additional diagnoses besides like the autism with PDA profile?
No. And it's interesting. We did something called the Connors questionnaire for ADHD when she was about 6 years old. And I think our results would have said probably ADHD, but the teacher and the school results said no. So we didn't take it any further at that point. And that's mainly because, and actually I've asked her about this again quite recently, she won't take any medicine. They can't take any medicine, no liquids, no tablets, no basic painkillers. She never has. From a very young child, she would gag anything that we try and get in her mouth. So she's managed all this time, really, mostly, apart from a couple of odd occasions with no medicine and definitely none from us at home. In terms of ADHD, she knows that if you have ADHD, maybe medication would help things make better, but I'm not going to be able to take it anyway. So what's the point in knowing? So I don't know. I see some parts of ADHD, but as I said, because our oldest was diagnosed with it quite recently, I know a lot about ADHD now, but I don't know for sure that Sasha would get that diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I think there is a lot of crossover with ADHD symptoms and autism and PDA. But there's other things that are sometimes said about PJ as well, about being oppositional there. And that is a word that was used about Sasha when she was very young by the pediatrician, but it's not defiant, and she's not doing things just to be awkward or to cause trouble. So in fact, Sasha's always withdrawn rather than caused any trouble, if that makes sense. If she can't do something, she would curl up into a mushroom shape. Or now she'll hide under a duvet. And you can see the fear and the anxiety. So yeah, it's really interesting, actually, the crossover.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, it's really interesting as a provider. I am often, when I am diagnosing autism with the PDA profile, I almost always end up giving some sort of anxiety diagnosis, because it really does have this anxiety basis. So even as you're describing some of these worries, I wondered has anyone ever brought up like a additional anxiety diagnosis for her? Or
no? And it's interesting because we've not had a lot of input along the way, because she was diagnosed young, and actually I think we've managed okay quite well at home, really. So there's not been a lot of outside input or us really going to get that support either. So it's not something we've, and again, because with anxiety, if a solution is to take some medication, that is not something that's open to her at the moment. Maybe when she's older, she might feel she wants to herself. I keep an eye on that. But yeah, for now, it don't need any other diagnosis. The PGA makes sense, total sense to us.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. So sometimes we'll hear PDA broken down into internalized PDA versus externalized PDA. Is that something you've come across?
Yeah, it's interesting. So as I said, Sasha never masked when she was young, went to school. As she got a bit older, maybe she would start to mask that. I think because she's not very vocal, maybe you might call it internalized, but it's always been very obvious to us in terms of her avoidance and resistance. But as I just said, she's never been violent or aggressive. There's never been any kind of disruption, really, other than dropping to the floor in a mushroom shape and then maybe not moving from what she's doing. But that is as disruptive as it's got. So yeah, different to maybe have some experience.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I definitely see somewhat of a pattern in terms of gender differences of like how PDA presents in females versus males. It does tend to often be more internalized in females versus externalized and more of that aggressive behavior or oppositionality or defiance. And in males, of course, it's not a one size fits all, but yeah.
Yeah. I also know girls who react in that way. So yeah, it can just depend sometimes on the environment. But I think, yeah, again, we've been lucky that Sasha hasn't reacted in that way because it brings with it a lot more attention and stress. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything else that comes to mind for you that you would want to share with the parents that are listening to this episode?
Yeah, I guess one other thing I've had to do a lot is stay calm. I just try not to react to any situation, even when I'm quite frustrated or when Sasha's tired, I'm going over situations and anxieties, and I know there's nothing I can do in that moment, but trying to not put any of my emotion into the situation. It's something that hasn't been easy, and I don't always get it right either, but it's definitely something I've had to work on. And I think, yeah, the longer you experience this fall, the more used to it you become. And it is really difficult right at the start, but once you figure it out and you understand and you stop worrying about society's expectations, all of those things can help. So time, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, I love that advice. Anything in particular that you found helps to regulate you in these moments or like strategies that you use for yourself?
I probably talk to myself a lot in my head. As in not out loud, but yeah, I have those words going through my head all the time.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it can be really helpful. It's like having a little mini coach in your head, helping you work through it and navigate it all. Steph, thank you so much. I know we've talked about your blog and the book and all of that, but tell people, and we'll put links in the show notes as well, where can people connect with you if they want to keep learning? Where can they get your book? Tell us all the things.
Yeah. So I've got the book here, Matt. See you in the family.
So
and
pretty.
It's called Life After the Light Bulb Moment, because I think that's something that's known commonly in the PDA world, is the light bulb moment when you suddenly realize this is what makes sense. So yeah, that's what it was like for us all those years ago. So yeah, that's the book, PDA and the Family. And my blog is at Steph's Two Girls. So www.steph's2girls, which is steph2girls.co.uk. And I'm on most social media, so Facebook and Instagram and all of those at Steph's Two Girl. And I do have some YouTube videos. So I'm not really great at the videos.
Awesome. But yeah. Awesome. And we'll link Sasha's YouTube video as well, or wherever it's linked. Is it on YouTube, did you say?
It's YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought so, but then I was questioning myself there. We'll link that as well. But thank you so much for being here today and sharing your story with us.
That's okay. Thanks for talking with me. It's lovely to meet you.
Yes. All right, y'all. That is a wrap for today's episode of Evolve with Dr. Tay. I will see you back here next time. Before we wrap up this episode, for real this time, I want to share a couple ways you can get even more value and what your next steps could be. First, join the Evolve Facebook group. We do Q&As about the episodes and so much more. I linked that group, my personal social media pages, and any resources I mentioned in this episode in the show notes. So scroll down now and join me online. When you submit questions on any of my pages, your question could be featured on this podcast. How cool is that? I love being able to speak on topics that feel directly relevant to your life. Your questions truly make a difference in the content we create here.
One last thing, do your fellow autism parents a favor. Share this episode on your social media and tag me. Autism currently affects 1 in 36 families in the United States and many more worldwide. So I'm sure there is a parent in your social media followers that could be served by this podcast. Thank you again for being here, and I'm so grateful we shared this time together. Bye, y'all.